It's a Hoytus Interruptus special. I'm Jeff Hoyt.
And I'm Cindy Hoyt.
And our special guest here today is Amanda Knox.
What up?
Hey, Amanda. Good to see you. Chris Robinson is here as well.
And her lovely husband, Chris.
Hello.
Here he is. Hello.
Amanda is an exoneree, author, actor, podcast host, stand-up comedian, executive producer, and the subject of just a wee bit of media scrutiny over the past couple of decades.
A wee.
Just a little bit.
A hair.
Full disclosure, Cindy and I have been friends with Amanda and Chris for going on 5 years now.
So this is cheating, really.
Yeah.
There will be no gotcha questions.
Yeah.
I mean, of all the people that give me a gotcha question, I trust
I know.
You.
This only means that we know you perhaps a little bit better than many other media interviewers do. Mm-hmm. But we still have questions.
Good.
The new show is Cartwheel. It is playing to two sold-out shows at Snapdragon this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Then the Rabbit Box Theater in Seattle next week.
That's
which
right.
I understand is all sold out as well.
There may be a handful of standing room tickets left, but those are going quickly too. Yeah.
Okay. Cartwheel room?
Yeah,
some cartwheeling room in the back.
You need room for a cartwheel.
There's fewer of those tickets.
Yeah.
And after that, off you go to Edinburgh.
That's right.
For the Fringe Festival.
It's coming up fast.
So let's start with, you know, for people that don't know what Cartwheel means, why is the show entitled Cartwheel?
Well, it is in part a commentary on the way that I was vilified back when I was a 20-year-old kid. One of the sort of things that was cited against me in court as evidence against me was this supposed cartwheel that I did in a police station that never actually happened. But beyond that, it's I titled the show Cartwheel because it's about motherhood. And, you know, I have a daughter, and one of those things that you do is you teach your kids how to do things, how to be in the world. And one of those things is do a cartwheel. It's just like a thing that you do with your kid that's so innocent and innocuous, but that has this like deep, dark resonance for me. And it turns into a metaphor for how to approach life by the end of the show. So it's really doing way too much work.
Eureka's actually in gymnastics class as we speak.
Right now.
Right now.
Oh, she dropped her off on the way over.
Yeah. Oh, and so cartwheels are going to be a part of your life very quickly now.
Oh, yes.
What's the goal with the show? You've been doing a lot of stand-up comedy lately.
Yeah.
And now comes this stage monologue, one-woman show. How did this decision to examine motherhood come along?
Yeah, well, it's actually funny. Chris and I were chatting in the car the other day. How did this come up where I brought in the Frida Kahlo connection?
Well, one of the
mirror on the
one
roof
of the criticisms that gets leveled at Amanda is, haven't you told this story enough? You wrote a memoir, you wrote another memoir, you did a Hulu show, you did a documentary, you did another documentary, like, well, can't you just shut up about it already? And Amanda's answer to that was, well, no one ever told Frida Kahlo to stop painting self-portraits.
Ah.
Which I think, you know.
Very good point.
Or
yeah.
Pablo Picasso or Vincent van Gogh or Rembrandt. Actually, we looked it up. Rembrandt has the record for most self-portraits by one of the great masters. But Frida Kahlo's percentage-wise is over one-third of all her paintings are self-portraits.
Wow.
And it's just interesting because, you know, I think that art is a way to process real life. And art has been a way that I have been processing my life and putting words to my experience. And one of the things that I have felt really pigeonholed in the past is being treated and thought of as this tragic figure, right? As this true crime figure, as this tragic figure, when I did not, that isn't representative of who I am. That is not something that I chose for myself. But I did feel like I was, you know, put in that box and that I wasn't really able to express myself in a lighthearted way because I was literally punished for it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of the point of the show is, you know, now that I'm sort of getting over what was done to me, I'm learning what this has taught me about the world and the way that it views women and treats women. And I'm thinking about how do I pass on the knowledge and wisdom that I learned the hard way to my children, who I hope are going to have a better life than I did, but who are inevitably going to face challenges, and processing how something that I was rewarded for being, like a quirky, confident kid when I was a kid, how that was twisted and used against me. Like, there's tension in that, because on the one hand, I want my daughter to also be a free spirit and to, you know, have joy de vivre and not be just constantly self-conscious and like hyper fixated on people judging her. And on the other hand, I don't want her to be a deer in headlights when people potentially try to hurt her. And so I'm raising a daughter, I'm raising a son in a world that is not fair and not kind and often rewards cruelty. And that's like, there's a lot of tension in the show of me sort of coming to terms with a lot of unresolved rage that I feel, but at the same time, trying to embrace that part of myself that was punished and vilified for so long.
Sounds hilarious.
It's so funny, guys. It's laugh a minute.
and there are laughs to be found in the dark.
Oh,
that's where
totally.
A lot of comedy gold is forged.
Well, it's also, to me, the story is a cautionary tale for all of us who see someone who perhaps is arrested and imprisoned, and some part of your brain goes, yeah, they probably did that.
Mm.
And then the translation into our modern world is people who are unjustly canceled. Maybe something happened and everything went sideways really fast, like it did for you.
Yeah, like reading people and this idea that we can just like at a glance read someone and know who they are. And how it's interesting how something as innocent and innocuous as a cartwheel could end up being used as evidence in a murder trial. Like, it's just wild.
Well, you didn't come home from Italy ever imagining that you'd find something funny about all of this, about all the absurdities that you experienced. But at some point, some of the light had to find its way in.
Well, you know what?
Do you remember when that was?
Well, it's funny that you say that, Jeff, because I have been, like, one of the first things that I did when I came home was crack a joke because of the absurdity of situation. So, again, do I even want to be telling this joke on air?
All right, I'll tell
this joke. So it's, again, we're amongst friends here. No one who's not a friend isn't listening. But when I first came home, I was, you know, helicopters followed me. I couldn't even go back home to my mom's house because there were all of these like paparazzi camped outside of her house. So we went to my aunt's house instead. And that's where I got to have this like big reunion with my family and, you know, people I hadn't seen from my life in years. And it was very overwhelming. I was just super overstimulated and surrounded by everyone I loved, and everyone's happy and excited. And they, you know, they bring out this cake and they're like, Amanda, cut the cake. And I'm like, are you sure about that, guys? Because, you know, like they're handing me this like huge kitchen knife and I'm just like, I haven't even touched cutlery in 4 years.
Not allowed to, I'm sorry. Right?
Or looked at a cake without wondering there's something
in
it.
I'm not about to leave my prints on that knife.
You know? Exactly. You know, like you just like, you have to have like literally the last time that I had touched a kitchen knife was like, you know, again, in this innocuous situation, I was cutting bread over at Raffaele's house. And then the next day I go back home and discover a crime scene, and that very kitchen knife was used as evidence in a murder. Again, like it's just, and so like all of that comes up in these like everyday moments, and I don't know, it just comes really naturally to me to be like.
I would say the frequency changes, like even just in the time I've known you, the amount of time you spend reflecting on this material in a dark way versus a light way has shifted. And that you may have told that joke the day you came home, but I've seen you blossom out of that darkness into someone who is way more willing to embrace your silly side. And I think one of the lessons of this show is that when you encounter someone through a public story, it's really easy to kind of fix them in your mind as the person related to those events in that context. But yeah. There's a whole other context for that person beyond that, beginning before that, you know, and a big part of this is Amanda reclaiming who she was before Italy, which was a musical theater kid.
Yeah.
Right. And a performer and someone who, you know, sewed her own pants. A weirdo.
Yeah. Well, then it's reemerging, really.
Yeah.
Just who you are. And I'm sure it's gotten easier over the intervening years. And another lesson, I know we want to talk about your relationship with your daughter. Mm. And another lesson that will be embedded in all this, whether you say it overtly or whether it just sinks in, is that happened.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was over. And then you went on with the rest of your life, and that life is a good life.
Yeah, I have a great life. And you know, to the eureka of it, to my kids' part of it, like, you know, one of the jokes that I have in this show is like, okay, when am I going to have the talk with the kids? And I thought I would have the talk when they were around middle school, but my daughter's already a precocious kid who's asking a lot of probing questions. But even more than that, like in an earlier version of the show, I depicted this moment that very much happened in real life where, you know, your kids watch you. They are constantly absorbing things that you do and you say. And one of the things that I caught her doing was mimicking me at the piano. And I thought, oh my gosh, she's playing the piano by herself, coming up with her own little song. And she was just tinkering. And I heard her sort of singing. And I crept up so I could hear what she was saying. And she was singing, I'm sad. I'm sad. Mimicking me.
Yeah.
Like, of course, I'm the one who just sounds sad all the time. And it just really hits me like, oh, okay, I've got some unresolved stuff that I'm working through. And she's watching me do it. And she's absorbing that. And I think the show itself is a statement also to my daughter of like, okay, bad things happen, but how do you confront them? How do you pick yourself back up and face life? And part of that is like processing that and being willing to put yourself out there even when the world has been unkind.
You once told me that it broke your heart a little bit to stand up in front of a group back when you were first starting to publicly tell your story, to have to go through the worst thing that ever happened to you. And it was hard, but it got easier the more you told the story. Cartwheel is not about that origin story in 2007 so much as it is about how it has impacted you as a mom.
Yeah.
How has shining a light on all of those absurdities that have, including media exposure, all the things that you've been subjected to, how has that been cathartic for you to be able to talk about these things in a lighter sense?
Well, I think it's especially like grounding it in my experience of motherhood universalizes it much more. Mm-hmm. Like, again, one of those, another joke that I have is that like I do that thing that all moms do, which is imagine all the horrific ways my children could die constantly, just without end. You know, like in that, and but like that has.
You're going to fall into that plastic bag.
Yes, exactly. And it's somehow going to tie itself around your neck. That's, you know, right. Like you're going to suck in that balloon. You know, like you're constantly having those visions as a parent. But then, of course, there's this like sort of dark undertone for me where it's like, yeah, some of those things are irrational, but also, some of them are totally rational.
Yeah.
And I've seen some really dark shit in my life. And I'm wondering, like, when is that lightning gonna strike again? And I think that universalizing that message really helps me feel connected to people, which is something that I had taken from me. That was a big thing that was stolen from me, was that feeling of human connection. And so going in front of an audience and sharing my story and feeling really encouraged by how an audience responds. Like, one of the things that made it so scary and difficult, especially early on when I was telling my story, was that I had had it beaten into me for years that no matter what I said and no matter what I did, people would not believe me and they would assume the worst about me and they would assume that I was lying. And that was incredibly debilitating. It greatly discouraged me from ever thinking that human connection was possible for me. But then I just took a little risk and I took a little risk and then I risked a little more and I was more and more vulnerable and more like just, you know, putting myself out there. And I got, instead of just that slap in the face feedback, I did get feedback of people feeling connected to my story. And that was really validating. And people coming up to me afterwards and saying, wow, like the fact that you have this perspective about your life really helps me have perspective about my life. And that is hugely gratifying and cathartic.
I'll bet. You had one of your ramp up shows. You've done it a couple of times now. Leading up to the Snapdragon shows this weekend, but you had an audience member laugh alone at something you said, and then he apologized for laughing.
It's like, no, that's what we're all here for.
Yeah.
Like it's great. I mean, I think some of the best comedy is comedy that makes you feel uncomfortable while at the same time makes you feel like you want to laugh, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, some of the best comedians are doing that as well. Like Tig Notaro goes up there and is like, "Hi, I have cancer, everybody. Hi, I have cancer," and everyone's like, "Ha!" You know, like they like putting that someone in the position of feeling tension and giddiness is an incredible superpower, and I think that I'm finding my way through doing that and also like really embracing the cringe. Like I'm cringy, I'm weird, and people are on the ride with me, and it's fun. It can be a lot of fun.
So you're two shows into this ramp up process that will take you to Edinburgh.
Yes.
What have you learned in those first couple of shows? What are you seeing? What are you feeling? What are you hearing?
Well, first, I think both of us are feeling reassured that it's hitting, right? Like we've been living with this script and working it and trying to make sure that, you know, when I'm trying to make you laugh, I'm making you laugh. And when I'm very specifically not trying to make you laugh, I'm not. And like the point of the story is coming across. And I think it is. And we've found the places where things could be a little more clear. And so we've been, I mean, as of this morning, like rewriting lines so that it's just a little more like on, like conveying what we really want to say. And I know this drives Chris nuts, but I feel like we're probably going to keep doing that. Just because as you do it, you learn more about what's connecting. Yeah. And then you just find ways to make the parts that maybe got chuckles last time, get full belly laughs the next time.
Yeah.
This is also just new space, deep end for us.
Mm.
But that's kind of what we've always done. Like we didn't ever make a podcast until we made a podcast. And I never directed a documentary until I directed a documentary. We have no experience in live theater. And here we are producing live theater.
Yeah.
And co-writing
basically
a comedy show.
There's just a lot of unexpected things that if we were seasoned theater professionals, we probably would have anticipated. And I'm sure we have some unorthodox solutions to some of these things. But even just in the writing process, our writing background, you know, mine comes from poetry and fiction, writing novels. Amanda's written memoirs.
Mm-hmm.
Both of us have done stand-up comedy, but, you know, putting on a comedic live theater piece is its own genre that has particular conventions and that certain sorts of delivery function well and don't function well. And
also there are different, like audiences are different. Like I'm going to be, I'm performing here in the US and then I'm performing in the UK, which is an entirely different audience.
Oh yeah. So. Oh, to give you a great example of this. And I just talked to one of our UK colleagues this morning.
Oh, is this about fruit leather?
About fruit leather.
Yeah. Okay.
So yeah, there's a joke about fruit leather in the show.
People
in the UK are not aware of this children's treat.
Like fruit roll-ups. Yeah,
fruit roll-ups, yeah.
Right, they've never heard of this fruit leather. When you describe what it is, they're like, oh yeah, my kid's eating that. And it's some brand name.
They call it something different.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do they even call it?
I forget. They call it the brand name, like whatever the brand name is.
Okay. That's helpful.
Yeah.
We'll find the brand name.
But Wham Bar is the recommended replacement. Or there's also something called
Wham Bar?
Wham Bar. So a Wham Bar, and again, we don't have this here, but it's like, you know, a Charleston Chew?
Yeah.
Like, it's just like incredibly tough and chewy.
Uh-huh.
That is their version, but it also has like Pop Rocks in it. So it's just like this like assault on the mouth of like sweetness.
Well, and so eight-year-old dream.
Much of the UK cuisine is an assault on the mouth, I think. Yeah.
Good point.
That's great. But yeah, so I'm trying to like work out this joke where I'm trying to like tell my daughter to be sweet and tough. And so I'm trying to find the perfect like kids treat to describe that.
Or like edge of tart.
Chia Pet was another one of those. We talked to some UK comedians and they're like, what's a Chia Pet? I'm not familiar with that. And it turns out that those were not on TV infomercials for decades in the UK.
Uh-huh.
People don't really know what a Chia Pet is, but they do know what a Cress
Head Americans
is.
Americans and their crazy fans.
Cress Head?
A Cress Head. So this is something
that's watercress instead of chia seeds?
Well, what they do is, this is like a typical like science experiment at schools in the UK where they'll take like they'll take an eggshell and they'll put some soil in it and then some chia seeds. So it's basically a Chia Pet, but like they're growing the hair of like they'll draw a face on the eggshell and then they'll grow the hair from
it's a homemade Chia Pet with watercress seeds.
Watercress.
Made out
watercress
of an eggshell.
Seeds. Yeah. Yeah. So
it's called a Cress Head.
It's called a Cress Head. Okay. So we have to like, there are alts to certain things in the script, depending on the
alts. Are you going to have to convert your whole performance
to
into
metric?
Well, maybe.
So I'd like to just for a minute get back to the heart of your message, which is talking to. Well, she's 5 this month.
Mm-hmm.
Like, do you have a kind of an internal timeline mapped out? Like, okay, when she's 5, I can tell her this about my experience. Mm. When she's 8, I can tell her this. When she's 13,
no.
I can tell her this.
The answer to that is no.
I mean, I talk in the show about how I want to be age appropriately honest.
Mm.
And I do allow myself to be guided by my kids' own curiosity. So they ask questions, I give answers. I do not avoid answering questions. And that's something that part of the show is a love letter to my mom, by the way. Like, it's really appreciating for the first time what the experience of being a mother going through everything that I was going through was like. But like, I do talk about the differences between the way I'm raising my kids and the way that I was raised. And one of those is answering direct questions.
Not saying you'll understand when you're older.
Or just plugging your ears and going, la, 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 la. You know?
Sex? What's that?
Yeah, exactly. So I'm not doing that. I'm erring on the side of too much information. And
I mean, just yesterday, we were getting out of the car and Eureka said, how many years until I die? How many more years until I die? And we said, well, probably be many years. You know, you might live to be 90. But not everyone lives that long. Some people die when they're much younger. And Amanda said, you know, my friend died when she was 21. And that's not very much older than you when she was killed. You know, so like she says that to Eureka. And Eureka knows what killed is. And she knows what death is. To the point where she's idly wondering to herself, when will I die? You know, and she didn't ask it with terror in her voice.
No,
you know,
no.
I remember wondering that.
What will you say if she ever asks, will I get killed?
Well, I mean, it's funny. The way that she processes things, and this is, again, part of like the fun of the show, is she kind of turns everything into a game. So, for example, again, like just a few days ago, she wanted to play Ghost Family. So we were all going to be a family of ghosts. And part of it is because there's that spooky house next to Lunetta's. Whenever we go in there, she's like, ooh, it's ghosts in there. So she wants to play Ghost Family. But of course, we can't just be ghosts. We have to have died. And so she wants us all to choose the way that we die.
Oh my gosh.
She
is precocious.
She's very precocious.
Whoa.
And oftentimes.
How did you die, Papa?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I ate my meatball too fast and choked, you know?
And I usually try to make it a lesson.
There's
like,
a lesson in there too.
Well, exactly. I try to like do a lesson.
Ways,
exactly. Right. I didn't wear my helmet when I was riding my bike. You know, like that's, and that's great. And honestly, like that's how people have been doing it forever.
Mm-hmm. Like that's how come we have fairy tales.
Exactly. That's how come
there's
we have
in the
fairy
woods.
Tales.
There's actual woods in the woods.
Yes. Or like there's a story that she loves. That's and Native Americans, or it's an it's a
like an Inuit story.
An Inuit story about the Kualapaluit that we had that I read as a kid. Like I've had this book since I was a kid, and the story is like, don't go out onto the ice by yourself because the Kualapaluit will come and grab you and pull you under the ice. And like we've been telling our kid, we've been warning our kids about ways they could die for a long time. We just often tell it in the terms of there's a monster.
Or you'll fall down off of there.
Right, exactly. And
you know, it strikes me, though, this is a very modern thing because for most of human history, death was very much more present in people's lives and in children's lives. And there was war and there was plague and there was all the, you know, like
disease,
the idea that you would, you know, not see a dead body until you were an adult, like many kids today, until it's one of your parents or something, you know, would be unheard of, right?
Yeah.
You would have seen dead bodies and you would know people who died by violence or by accident.
And you would have had your relatives washing the body.
Yeah.
And the idea that you would, you know, how do you tell your kids about death is like a question that only
that's
makes...
That's a very modern question. Yeah. That's it's first world problems.
So you go off to the UK and you'll be in Edinburgh. The UK is a place that's not been terribly kind to you over the years.
It's been kind of terrible.
Yeah, yeah.
Misplaced animosity.
The tabloids ran extremely salacious things about you that were just made up out of whole cloth during the case. They will probably be there covering your performance.
Yes, I am anticipating
that. They'll be free to see whatever they want to see and write whatever they want to write. Are you actively planning for that, or is it just you're going to cross that bridge when you come to it?
I mean, it depends on what you mean by plan for it.
Yeah.
I'm not doing my show because of it.
Right. Of course, yeah.
Are you calling them out within the show?
Yes, I do.
Saying,
I do call them out.
Be ready for this.
Yeah, I do call them out in the show. Part of the show is critiquing the way that a innocent young girl was twisted into a monster, not just by a prosecutor, but by a media. And it was like when I thought about like the stakes of the show, one thing that I really wanted to make clear was this show is bigger than me. It's like my prosecutor, for example. My prosecutor doesn't really exist in this show. Like I write about him a lot in, you know, in the in my book, and we cover it a lot. That's a whole subject of the documentary that Chris made. And he doesn't exist in the show. I don't even name him. It's because he's not a threat to my daughter, right?
Right.
The world that enabled him and didn't hold him accountable is a threat to my daughter. And so that is what is being critiqued in this show, is all of the people and the institutions and the cultural norms that allowed for an innocent young girl to be held accountable for a man's crime.
Not only that, but made money off of their lies about you.
Yeah, profited. By harming.
I'm glad you brought tickets tonight because it's about time that this money
we had
money train went the other way around.
Although we're losing a lot of money on this Fringe thing. Nobody makes money at Fringe, and
it's
we
true.
Are especially not making money.
Well, I don't know if many people go to Fringe with an entourage.
That's true. We have kids. We have
parents.
We have security. So
yeah, not many Fringe people have to have security.
You have critics who have said for years, come on, Amanda, just move on.
get over that PTSD.
Yeah, just get over that.
And yeah, when I watch, you know, I've seen pieces of this show, to me, it feels less like rehash than it does like progression.
Mm-hmm.
Does it feel that way to you? Is this the next step of your moving through this process?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think actually I had a really interesting interaction with somebody who the second one that I did at that brewery in Kirkland. Someone came up to me afterwards, and he was like, how are you okay? Like he was like emotional. He was just like, I don't understand how you're okay. Like the fact that you're even out in public at all is kind of astonishing to me. He was just like, he just was like flabbergasted. He was like, I feel like if I went through everything you went through, I would be scared to leave my house. So the fact that you're like even outside talking to people who you don't know is like a miracle. Like that is like a fucking miracle to me. Like that, like you are working through things, and you are like, I'm directly addressing head on issues that have traumatized me for years in a very public way.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is the reason why I'm able to be out in public, is because I'm tackling them head on and I'm addressing things that need to be addressed as they arise. And one of the things that I haven't addressed is rage. Like, you know, up until this point, I think a lot of my processing of everything that happened has been like processing my sadness, my grief,
and finding acceptance and compassion and forgiveness for the people who harmed you. I mean, the Mouth of the Wolf documentary and her book Free, is those are the key emotions. There is like acceptance.
Yeah.
Accept the life you didn't ask for, etc.
And then people come to me after reading that or after seeing that, and they're like, wow, you're not angry. And I'm like, oh, no.
don't
misunderstand me.
Well, and I think the key thing for this show is that, you know, you can accept the ways that you were harmed, but accepting that level of treatment for your child is a whole different ballgame than accepting it for yourself.
And that's where it becomes a love letter to my mom, because, like, one of the things that this experience did was it introduced conflict into my relationship with my mom, because she couldn't accept it.
Mm-hmm.
And now that I'm a mom, I get it.
Totally.
Yeah. You know,
when I was watching the Hulu series, I mean, I knew from being told and from knowing your mom, I intellectually knew what was going on in her heart during this. Mm. But somehow when I saw the series and I saw Sharon Horgan being your mom, who did a very good job at that, suddenly that seemed to be what it took to take me back to our daughter when she would have been 20 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And just going, I mean, the whole shock of it just went through my body. You know, what if that was Natalie?
Mm-hmm.
And I was there. And I think that's part of what you understand to a degree now.
Mm-hmm.
Well, wait till she's 20.
Oh my God. I mean, that's the terror, is it's she's not a baby anymore. She's becoming her own person. And I'm at a certain point going to have to sit back and not be able to protect her anymore and live with that.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how to do that.
No.
Well, you've also said many times that you would encourage her to study abroad.
Mm-hmm.
It was a great experience until it wasn't.
Right. And for most people, it is a life-changing experience in a positive way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, it feeds their worldview.
Mm-hmm. It gives them a broader perspective of what it means to be human, which is so, so important in a world that is deeply isolating.
And be human and to learn to trust people who don't think like you do, look like you do, act like you do.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, it's the reason we're all still alive, is because we share an initial, most of us, if we're lucky, sense of trust from childhood up. And yeah, to have that expanded on a global level is invaluable. And so what you've got is the other shoe.
Exactly.
This is a Hoytus Interruptus special. Jeff and Cindy Hoyt here with you. Amanda Knox and Christopher Robinson are our guests here in the Gene Boss studio in downtown Vashon Island. The show, Cartwheel, will be fine-tuned over the course of the next week and then performed at Edinburgh, which is also, for many performers, a fine-tuning process. They take work over there that they intend to then take on the road. Is there a plan to...
World's biggest workshop.
to travel with this show in the future after Edinburgh and take it out on the road, Netflix special? What do you got? What are you thinking?
I mean, I would love for Cartwheel to continue its journey into the world and for more people to see it. We've worked tremendously hard on it. So I think it deserves to have a broader audience. As far as like plans, we are so overwhelmed with the plans of just getting this thing to Edinburgh that we haven't made any plans yet.
I mean, there's you know, we just got a ticket comp request from a Broadway booker to come to the Fringe show, you know? So there's like people there who are going to be, who scout for other theaters who are going to watch the show.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And if there's anything I've learned from life, it's like, you can make the best of plans and then life will happen to you. So I'm kind of just like, I will let life lead me where it's taking
That's
me.
That's good.
We'll see what opportunities arise in the wake of this, I think.
Yeah. Well, when you first started talking about Edinburgh, I think Cindy and I both went, what? Wait a year. Take your time. Slow down. Stop.
Yeah, you're like, why can't you come and get coffee with us?
I said that
why
too.
Why can't you let your heart rate return to normal?
I know.
But now that you're in it, now that you're feeling it, now that the shows have, you know, the first couple shows have gone well and you're kind of feeling the vibe, are you glad that you went ahead and made the decision to push to get it done this year?
Well,
or is that open question?
I think that I did not anticipate how challenging and how much this would ask of not just me, but as us as a family. Like, this has been a lot harder than I thought it was going to be. Going back, would I give myself a little more room to breathe? I think part of the reason why I latched on to the idea of doing something this year was because, you know, my book came out in 2025, so did the Hulu show, and I was a little bit feeling that kind of loss of, here are these things that I've been working on for years and now they're out in the world and I feel creatively adrift because
post-event letdown syndrome.
Exactly. So like, I'm so proud that like these things that we've been working on for years are out there in the world, but then I'm sort of destabilized by the fact that I'm not like working, you know, head to the grindstone, like on it.
Yeah.
And so I was like, okay, full throttle, go. And it was like, okay, wait, this is really hard and I'm breaking out in hives, but we're here, we're doing it. Mm-hmm. I think again, like these past two shows have made us feel like, okay, this thing has legs, like we're doing it and it's real and it's real. It's like a real show. So we're proud of it. We've worked our butts off at it. Could it have been less stressful? Yeah.
Yeah, maybe.
Well, but that'll be a lesson you take into the future.
Yeah, totally.
So post Cartwheel, you guys have also been telling other people's stories through the Hard Knocks podcast. You did a true crime series recently. I've not gotten to listen to it, but
Doubt, the
our
case
daughter
of Lisa Letby.
Yep. Is a huge fan.
Oh,
Natalie
sweet.
Loves it.
Yay.
And, so is that what you envision after you finish this run of Cartwheel at supposedly out in the, you know, the rest of the country for for a time. But what would be the next logical thing for you in terms of storytelling?
Well, we certainly would love to help shepherd other people's stories into existence. Like, that's something that we are actively working on, and we have multiple irons in the fire on that front. Chris is also going back to novel writing, so that's great. Anything else that you're I'm really leaning into my performer side, so
You were just filming a movie.
Yeah.
That's right.
You almost forgot.
Oh, yeah.
When for anyone else, that would be a big deal. For you, it's just like, well, I can't between 10 and 2 on Thursday because I'll be on set. And then, okay.
The world is changing too fast to answer a question like that, in my opinion. And I'm just going to look at what the media landscape looks like 6 months from now, a year from now, and we'll probably end up pivoting into some unexpected direction as we continually have.
Mm-hmm. Life happened to you.
Very conscious pivot, honestly. I've been worried about AI as a media creator, and I know that an AI generated podcast is capable right now, right? Even a video is capable, right? People are making entire movies out of AI with no humans doing the acting, right? So
did any humans do the writing?
Often not.
Oh my gosh. We're all doomed.
Yeah.
But live performance is one of those things that I think is going to be much more resilient to the AI wave than other things.
And that is true.
That's why we are leaning into live performance as a creative duo here. Mm-hmm. And there may be other forms of live performance beyond. I mean, Amanda's also been making original music, so that's another thing we're going to continue dabbling with, too.
Mm-hmm. Excellent.
Oh, the songs. Yeah. Those are beautiful songs.
Oh, yeah. Those.
Yeah, she's also been writing and recording music.
I didn't. I forgot to put that in the list of roles.
Yeah, I mean, you can't leave that off the CV.
So, Cartwheel, 2 shows, Snapdragon, this weekend, sold out. Sorry, can't get tickets to that.
Wah, wah.
Rabbit Box Theater next week.
Be able to come and stand
next
in the
several performances.
Also, the Tacoma.
Yes, Tacoma is on
Tacoma Little Theater.
It's on the 28th. That's sold out. There's
a wait
list.
Sorry. Yeah. Never mind. Won't
and I'm
it.
Sure that by the time we're done talking here, the Rabbit Box is going to be sold out.
Anyone want to go to
Scotland?
There are tickets left in Scotland, but it's
there's
also
no hotel rooms left in Scotland.
Selling out in Scotland.
Okay, yeah. Well.
Okay.
But all that to say, we do imagine a bigger Seattle run of Cartwheel at some point in the future. We won't name names yet, but we're talking with some venues and trying to figure out what that would look like and when it would be. But it would be a bigger theater for multiple nights so that hopefully we wouldn't run into this capacity problem. Well,
where was it? Was it the Neptune where you performed
Mouth of the Wolf?
Yes, thank you. I was going, the wolf one.
The documentary that Chris directed.
Yeah.
That was at the Neptune.
Yeah.
Then there was, you made a documentary this year too. It was
Yeah, that's Chris. I'll let him take responsibility for that. I was just on my journey and he was like, here's a camera in your face.
Yeah, but that's a thing too.
Well, it's all dizzying just to imagine all of it, but you guys have handled it with such aplomb, to my mind.
Oh, thanks.
It's been really, really cool to watch you
Thank you for being there and being a sounding board for us. You've read a few of the scripts.
Oh, yeah.
And you don't get to see our fights at home.
No, but I have imagined them.
I've been reading Lucid, and I'm like, the little between the two of you things are very resonant.
Well, and I just have to say that You've raised the stages of grief to a new level. I mean, you got denial, anger, sadness, grief, and stand up.
Yes, it is.
Not the usual
The final stage of grief.
The final stage of grief. Yeah.
Someday, maybe acceptance when you're 80.
Maybe.
You know, one little button on the why do you do this in public thing relating to that is just, you said this thing a few months ago that stuck with me, which is just that the trauma was both private and public, and so the healing has to be both private and public.
That's a good point.
The relationship with humanity, with society, was something that was actively damaged, and you can't repair that relationship. You can't repair your standing and your reputation and your expectations of other strangers you meet. You can't repair your instincts around being a person in the world mm-hmm. unless you go and
heal
do it in, front
in
of
the
people.
World.
Especially when these wounds were inflicted at such a socially expanding age as the ages of 20 through 24. You're still taking a lot of that in. And I mean, but I got to ask, have you ever been tempted to just like dox Rudy Gaudet?
I mean,
I know he's reoffended and he's back in prison, but that isn't me.
He's not back in prison yet, but he is on trial for committing further crimes against young women since getting out. So I'm keeping an eye on that. Mm-hmm. To this day, I'm still just infuriated that he was never even charged with all of the crimes that he committed against Meredith and me. Mm-hmm. So that's deeply frustrating. But
people don't even really imagine or realize that he committed crimes against you.
Mm-hmm.
And those crimes are primarily criminal slander, mm-hmm. right? I mean, Amanda remains convicted right now of criminal slander, and she's appealing that conviction still. People are like, why don't you move on? She's like literally has a case before the European Court of Human Rights right now,
legally,
20 years
I
later.
Can't.
Right? But meanwhile, the guy who actually falsely accused her of murder mm-hmm. has never been charged with
and
criminal slander.
And he broke into my house and like, so.
Yeah. Well, Cartwheel.
Took a wrecking ball to your life.
Yeah.
Cartwheel is going to be, I think you're on to something great.
Thanks.
And I look forward to seeing how it evolves. Hearing all about how Edinburgh helps you fine-tune it into what it becomes next. And just want to thank you for coming in and hanging out with us this morning.
Oh, well, thank you. It's about time we had a hangout.
Yeah, it is.
We have to get there any way we can. We should have brought coffee.
This is the only way you can get a coffee date. You got to put a microphone in front of it.
That's right.
Yeah.
Streaming.
Hey. We'll remember that for next
time. The streaming link will go up on voiceofashon.org shortly. If you missed any part of this conversation, you can listen to the streaming link. And this has been, Cindy, you have something else?
Oh, I just wanted to say, maybe after you've caught your breath after Fringe, we can do this again.
Yeah.
And kind of process
what
that was like.
Oh, a post-Edinburgh hangout.
Oh, yeah, that'd be great.
I mean, who gets to do that?
Yeah.
We'll absolutely do that. So thanks again, and this has been a Hoytus Interruptus special on Voice of Ashon.